IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of All Things Policy. I am your host, Apoorv Kumar. India is in a very tricky situation right now with respect to COVID-19 vaccination. While on one hand, according to official estimates, we have been able to fully vaccinate just under 6% of our population as we speak. On the other hand, demand-side bottlenecks such as vaccine hesitancy is posing a big challenge to our vaccine program. With the new virus variant hitting several countries and India in what is also called as the third wave, vaccine hesitancy in a vast country like India can reverse the gains that we have made in the past few months after the second wave hit in April and May. One of the factors that's actually driving this vaccine hesitancy is wrong information about the efficacy of vaccines and its side effects. And the very ignorance about these aspects is something that's sort of, stopping people to get vaccinated. To discuss this topic and how disinformation is putting us to a major risk, I have with us a special guest today, Kamesh Shekhar. Kamesh is a technology and policy researcher. He's currently pursuing his postgraduate program in public policy at Takshashila Institution. His research interests are data protection, intermediary liability, issue of disinformation on social media, AI in media, etc. To know more about Kamesh's work, please visit his page link provided in the description. Welcome, Kamesh, to All Things Policy.
Thanks for having me, Apoorv.
If you are interested in topics such as these and others in general, like public policy, technology and policy, then do sign up for the Graduate Certificate in Public Policy program at Takshashila that starts from 4th of September. The last date to submit your applications is 28th August. We have a technology and policy stream where we cover aspects such as these that we are talking right now. Kamesh, in your recent article for the Takshashila blog, which you wrote a few days ago, you have written about how this/misinformation is a big challenge for the COVID-19 vaccine coverage in India due to vaccine hesitancy. But before I move to your key arguments, which you have presented in your article, just help us understand the difference between misinformation and disinformation. Are these similar things or they are quite different?
Once again, thank you so much, Apoorv, for having me discuss this critical topic. Yes, as you said, right, like it's essential to differentiate between misinformation and disinformation before we focus more on the key argument. To me, what differentiates misinformation from disinformation is the underlying intention. When a person produces baseless, misleading information to deceive others, it's called disinformation. When their credulous followers or the people who encounter this information starts sharing the same misleading information within their network, it's called the misinformation. In the latter case, what I mean is the case of misinformation, intention is not to deceive. Instead, the reader believes the information they read is truth. Therefore, I think misinformation happens predominantly due to two reasons. A, users' incapacity in differentiating between a factual and a wrong set of information. B, users' pre-existing biases, which would lead towards consuming information which suits their ideology. So I do think there is a difference between misinformation and disinformation, which might be very thin, but it's still important to make that differentiation.
Great, great point, Kamesh. One supporting question will be that, is it always the social media that spreads this misinformation, disinformation, or there are other avenues or channels through which this gets disseminated?
Sure. So, misinformation and disinformation does, spread through social media, but it's just not the only medium through which it spreads. So the problem of fake news, misinformation, disinformation has been there for a longer period of time. But having more of these digital public spheres, this problem has got a little more aggravated. So, yeah.
Right, All right. Let me get straight to the to your key arguments from your article, Kamesh, and help us understand how does this misinformation lead to vaccine hesitancy? I mean, could you walk us through the entire process? How does it start and what it leads to?
Great. Sure. Before we move to see the connection, right, between the misinformation and disinformation with the vaccine hesitancy, it is vital to understand where people stand within the vaccine standpoint spectrum. Within this vaccine standpoint spectrum, I think there are three sorts of people, you know, who are pro-vaccine and swing people in middle, I mean, who are like not entirely sure of getting vaccinated. And towards the other end is entirely anti-vaccine people, you know. While it is difficult to intervene at the anti-vaccine level, we should start targeting, you know, swing people for the start, such that, you know, they move towards the pro-vaccine side. Eventually, I think like, you know, this would be followed by the anti-vaccine people. While there can be various reasons for, you know, different standpoints on the vaccination, that could be starting from, you know, fear, beliefs, value systems, and historic dispositions. But in most cases, I do believe the information consumed by people firms up their intent. I also want to, like, you know, make this point is that this is how it is connected to, you know, misinformation and disinformation, because the information landscape is filled with them. Therefore, like to have swing people, later obviously the anti-vaccine people, move towards pro-vaccine, it's critical to tackle mis and disinformation, which is actually found by a study at MIT to spread faster than the truth or the factual information. So this is the arc that I see, this where, like, you know, vaccine hesitancy happens, like, you know, through or firms up through misinformation and disinformation.
Right. I'll come back to my earlier question. How is the problem of disinformation and misinformation connected to social media platforms, specifically and especially with respect to vaccine hesitancy? How does this mechanism work?
This is a great and an important question in this information age. As I said, right, like, you know, with emergence of digital public spheres like social media platforms, this problem has did, like, you know, aggravate, and we have seen this happening in, like, you know, different instances across the globe, not just in India. One of the surveys that I looked into, you know, for my article was conducted by Facebook among its platform users. And it is actually titled COVID-19 Symptom Survey. And the survey had questions on vaccine hesitancy. And it was really startling to see that 29% of Indians surveyed are hesitant to take vaccine. To just give a, like, you know, division within that 29%, around 12% said definitely not going to take vaccine. And 16 said probably not. So besides, you know, a study published by Cambridge shows that people who have internet access are more skeptical towards vaccine. But, you know, just to, like, have to take this with a pinch of salt, the study was done in the context of, you know, wealthy countries. But I still feel this inference, like, holds across as disinformation and misinformation spread significantly through social media platforms. And we have seen this in different instances, as I mentioned earlier. In India, if you could see some stats, 14 billion users access Facebook and 500 million users use WhatsApp, and a considerable amount of people use various social media platforms. While this might not sound like a lot of people comparatively, but there is something like, you know, a concept of, like, you know, trickle-down effect kicks in, which was pointed out by various experts in different times. Disinformation, misinformation spreads faster in the real world. I think this is how, you know, the problem is connected to social media platforms. Besides, you know, it is also important to note, you know, survey report by Reuters Institute at Oxford University. It suggests that, like, 39% of Indian respondents express trust in the information they read on social media. And actually, it's been found that this is more than many other, you know, countries which have been surveyed. So, yeah. So these are all certain points that we have to keep in mind while we are talking about the problem of misinformation, information, disinformation connected to social media.
Right. I'm glad that you brought up Facebook's COVID-19 system survey, Kamesh, because frankly, when I was reading the findings, I was scared to look at a significant proportion. I think 29%.
That's right.
Just mentioned 29% of Indian population who were hesitant to take vaccines. How much of this hesitancy is due to social media? Is it only social media, or there could be other sort of, you know, avenues, as I mentioned earlier, you know, rumors or rumour or all those things? Or is this just social media?
Interesting. I think, like, you know, we need more nuanced research on this question, you know, though this is a very interesting question. There could be various reasons and causes that could lead towards vaccine hesitancy. But literature points out that disinformation, misinformation does play a significant role in firming up the intent. In some places, right, like, it also acts as a root cause. But I feel, right, more research is needed towards understanding the extent to which misinformation, disinformation spreads to social media, which in turn leads or, like, you know, firms up the vaccine hesitancy or any other problem in the future. You know, like, so that, like, more targeted interventions can be instituted to tackle the same. So, yeah.
While studying about vaccine hesitancy, Kamesh, it just occurred to me, and there were a few articles that were doing the rounds, it just occurred to me that, is there a pattern or are there any differences in patterns between rural India and urban India when it comes to vaccine hesitancy while doing research or what does your reading or assessment say and what do you think is driving this difference? Is it rural Indians who are getting conned by this wrong information, or is it just urban India, or is it both, or it's a mix of both? What do you think?
I guess the urban and rural divide does exist in terms of vaccine hesitancy. Recently, a Hindu article flashed some light onto the number of people who had taken first dose of vaccine in rural and urban India, which was like 15 and 30% respectively. That is like 15% in rural and 30% in urban as of May 2021. This actually, again, bolsters your point and, like, my point on, like, you know, rural and urban divide. There can be various reasons for this disparity, you know, but I think two significant causes could be, you know, historic disposition, which might be true in the case of, like, marginalized community in general. And the second one is the effort. But despite making vaccination process effortless, I think historic disposition might cause vaccine hesitancy in the rural context, which has been reported by various studies and articles, in fact. And people might start consuming information primarily through, you know, WhatsApp, one of the, you know, platforms set to spread more information that fits their intent. Also, like, one more nuance which I want to, like, you know, flag when it comes to the urban and rural thing is, I feel the reach of fact-checked information reaching rural belt might be very low. So, yeah. So, that's my take on this.
That's very interesting, Kamesh. The last point, that the fact-checked information in the rural belt might be lower. While studying about this process, I think there's one long article, there was a series of articles published on The Wire. And the argument was, the central argument of those articles was that this vaccine hesitancy is more in urban India because of mis- and disinformation, and lesser in rural India because of misinformation. They argued that the vaccine hesitancy in rural India is not by wrong information, it's not due to wrong information, but it's the rural people, the folks in the rural India, their resentment and their anger towards the government, towards the state, because they didn't perform the way they, I think they didn't deliver their, they didn't perform the way they were supposed to perform during April, in the months of April and May. It is that anger that is sort of holding them back. Although I'm not very convinced of this argument, because somehow it lacks evidence. It's more of opinion and observation. But very interesting point, Kamesh, that, you know, fact-check information in the rural belt might be lower. Do you think that the fact, I mean, just a general sort of a question, and help our audience understand, how does fact-check information being consumed by a regular person? I mean, how does it work?
All right. Yeah. So thanks, Apurva, for asking that great question on fact-checked information. So, like, I would like to, like, make my answers into two parts. One is the fact-checked information through media sources itself, and another is the social media platforms. So, you know, so when we talk about media sources, we do have separate fact-checking organizations, or the news, you know, news organizations which, like, you know, predominantly only does fact checking, like, you know, Boom Live, etc. and stuff. But, you know, I'm very critical and I might just not have a data to like, you know, bolster my point, but like how many people do go and like, you know, read these kinds of information or like go and like access this fact check, you know, news articles and like, you know, and do know whether like, you know, these kind of organizations exist, at least in the rural belt or like, you know, for anybody who's new to this kind of a concept, right? And second point that I would like to talk about when it comes to fact-checked information itself is the social media flagging it stuff, right? So it is that like, you know, social media does flag informations which are wrong, right? But that itself is a little problematic because like, you know, I think like harm is already caused by spreading. And this might really not like, you know, reach many people because like there is also algorithmic way of like looking at stuff, right? Like, you know, the information which people read is according to their intent. So what if this information is consumed and people just don't reach again to read the, you know, fact checked information? So there could be that gap which would ultimately lead people not to come to know about what is the truth. So I do think these are like some of these issues when it comes to fact-checked information and like how well we can package it for better reach and to like have a better, you know, impact over tackling the misinformation, disinformation is a very crucial question which needs to be answered in the future.
Right. Great, Kamesh. Kamesh, in your article, you have written about these solutions as well, right? You have proposed some solutions. So what measures, according to you, should be taken to control the spread of this wrong information on vaccination that is sort of, you know, harming us and that's going to harm us in a big way? And who do you think should be the important stakeholders in this exercise? Is it only the duty of the government or citizens, local authorities, leaders or local leaders, religious leaders should also pitch in? Because, you know, a classic case study is the polio vaccine program, in which it was local leaders, religious leaders who actually persuaded people and citizens to help their children get those two drops, those boon zindagi ki. So who are the important stakeholders, according to you?
Great that you asked this question, because like I think, you know, every stakeholder has a role to play when it comes to tackling this huge problem. Starting from government, social media platforms, and you know, consumers themselves. So, like, just if I could take like a little more time and like, you know, try to give you little highlights of a couple of crucial points that I've actually discussed in my article on in terms of solutions, right? And try to like, you know, map it to these stakeholders. I think like, you know, it would be important to do that. So, starting from government. Right. Government has been indulging in communication strategies, primarily through social media, to advocate vaccine and crib disinformation. While this could be a step in the right direction, it is also important to, you know, package factual content effectively and not in a misleading way. For instance, concept of herd immunity can be really misleading, where people might like, you know, start thinking they could like to be the part of that indirect protection as rest takes the vaccine. So like, I think these are very factual information, but how you are going to package it and like how you are going to give it is very, very crucial and important. So besides, a lot of information on vaccination is very generic, which leaves a lot of void filled with various interpretations and like manipulations. Therefore, I think it's important to have case-by-case context-relevant information as part of communication strategy. This could be really, you know, an obvious process, but still, I think it's worth a try. So that's a very important point, I think, that the government has to do ASAP. And moving on to social media, one of the other key stakeholders when it comes to this entire, you know, concept, which we have been discussing for like, you know, in this podcast. So like here, I would like to like, you know, talk about something. This is like, you know, there have been like, there's a lot of research and there has been a lot of work going on in terms of ex post measures, right? That is after the, you know, the harm has been caused. And I do agree that is important because there is falling through cracks happen. But I think like, let's just take a step back and think about ex ante. measures. And I think like one of the measures that I would really like to advocate is prevalence-based relation matrix. This is something which I've been like discussing in like, you know, my previous work as well. So what is it simply is that like, you know, you need to make a prevalence-based gradation matrix for COVID-related information to formulate proportional measures according to the prevalence of the information. It can be like, you know, starting from the reach of the information to the number of followers the people have. So the simply putting that matrix, but like they're like the amount of data that social media have, they can actually do an even more better job when it comes to doing this gradation and have a proportional measures when it comes to more prevalent information than the less prevalent information on vaccines. In addition, this is something which we have been like, you know, discussing, like I was mentioning during your point on, you know, the fact checks, right? There is, you know, there is a need for a provision for appropriate use of algorithms by social media platforms to recommend vaccine-related information to each user. Why is this important, right? Because like our biases are reinforced by these algorithmic, you know, driven recommendations, which keeps us away from the content that does not fit our ideology. Like this would ultimately, you know, what would happen because of this information filter bubble, quote unquote, could block the counter arguments from reaching us up, which could be including fact check, right? So this is what, like, I think, like, you know, as a first step, a social media platform should have as an ex-ante measure.
Kamesh, at this point, we have to take a short break. And after the break, we will discuss further about the stakeholders that are required to address this situation. Hey, welcome back. So Kamesh, you were talking about the stakeholders and you have just covered government, their role, and the social media platform's role. Do you think there are other stakeholders also in this whole exercise of addressing vaccine hesitancy and misinformation?
Yes, major point is that we do also, as a user or a consumer, have a very important role to play. You know, I would like to like, you know, like point out this. It has been noted that misinformation such as like vaccine effect or menstrual cycle was circulated through WhatsApp. Okay. While in different instances, I have also read that like WhatsApp does limit your forward limits when it comes to forwarding message limits, basically, when it comes to these kinds of information, you know. But I think like, you know, less can be done regarding the information itself because messages are end-to-end encrypted. Just stepping back and like, you know, try to plug in another thing is that breaking end-to-end encryption cannot be a solution, you know, which has been like, you know, like extensively debated right now across various like, you know, platforms with the IT rule 2021 asking to trace the first originator, which would ultimately lead to the end-to-end encryption, you know, getting hampered. Why like end-to-end encryption is not the absolute solution is because I think, you know, that would hamper user privacy and also it could bring in unintended harms and that would really cannot be tackled. So therefore, then what we could do about this, right? So as the misinformation, disinformation vaccines like, right, like, you know, fall through these cracks, like how I spoke about right now, which is not only through messaging platforms, but generally also as a consumer, I think we should like, you know, introspect the information we are about to share, consume, comply with our intent. So what I meant by that is like when you're going to read some information and you think, okay, this does like, you know, go with what I think, then it's important that we go and like cross-check those information through referring to various credible sources. And also like having said that, right, like it's also important and it's very, very essential to notice and very mindful we should be that it's not really fitting to put the responsibility of this issue only on the users. Because we did speak about the various stakeholders like before, and everybody's hands has to be like tied together or like, you know, coordinated to, you know, tackle this issue.
Right, Kamesh, I think when you were explaining this point, I couldn't help but recall the massive YouTube videos that were doing the rounds in April and May. Random YouTubers would come up with some random theory on vaccine and they were like millions of hits and views. And I was really amused and puzzled and actually shocked that something like this is getting so much of traction. Yeah. I mean, that was quite bizarre. Also, Kamish, when you spoke about the government as an important stakeholder, I think that was a brilliant point, because I think a lot of this distrust is also coming because the ministry and the government has not been able to share, you know, transparent data of vaccine trials, of vaccinations, and all aspects of you know, our vaccine policy.
Exactly.
That creates a sort of a trust vacuum, and that is why there is so much of distrust and apprehension when it comes to taking that jab.
Exactly. And adding to that point, Apoor, and like, you know, there has been like, you know, a couple of other experts also discussing about this externally, that like, we do need demographic level breakout of, you know, vaccine uptake. You know, so that like people could just see for themselves that like, you know, what has been within their community level of like coverage of vaccines. When we were talking about, you were also rightly pointed out through those, that Wire article on like this historic disposition where people are not really, this entire concept of like, you know, us versus, you know, others, which is us as the community versus the others who's the, you know, government or the health organization, etc. and stuff. So that people can see it for themselves. At least we, as a baby step, we can start with like, you know, sex disaggregated data to show that like how many like women have taken the vaccine and etc. Yeah, so that level of like, you know, very minute data is important, I suppose, to tackle when it comes to information packaging. Yeah.
Also, I think this is my public health sort of researcher coming out in element. One aspect of vaccine hesitancy is also a mistrust of general public on our public health systems. So one of the narrative is that these health workers didn't come when we were having, you know, common fever or viral or flu. But now, for some very strange reasons, they are knocking our doors with this vaccine. So yeah. I think from this element of surprise, hesitancy and inhibition is also coming up.
True.
So
true.
Like there are several aspects that we can go on and on and on. But Kamish, I just hope that the solutions and interventions that you have suggested in your article and this conversation help curb the menace of misdisinformation and address the challenges of vaccine hesitancy. It was a pleasure talking to you, Kamish. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Apoor.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to us. Please do sign up for our public policy courses. The application process is live. The last day to submit your application is 28th of August. Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.